Contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all been giving up going to the World Cup.
And ponies, naturally.
I thought Mike was away. What's Mike doing here?
Pink ponies, naturally. Pink Pony is Tron with ponies. $1 billion. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so maybe it's just a recording of Mike. All my favourite Mike sound effects. I'm never too far away from Mike. So, contrary to popular wishes, you can't escape Mike Saunders even if he goes away to a different country. Don't worry, he's back soon, listeners. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And it's only a three-man team right now. And we are somewhat short on time, I'm afraid to say, because we are doing a magazine right now. However, we have stepped away from our desk to bring you episode 12 of podcast season number 2, in which we are talking Firefox 4, the first beta, is now available with many new features and design stuff, while Nokia is moving forward with Miko as fast as possible. At the same time, we report back, at least two of us do, on our You Dare Us to write an interesting command line, and of course our usual favourites, the discovery of the week, and in the hot seat, which this week was specially requested by readers to be me doing a Python. You bring it on yourselves, listeners. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the Linux Format magazine, and we are very happy when you do. Please go to tuxradio.com/subscribe and find out more. So, time is of the essence, so let's crack on straight into the news. Firefox 4 Beta 1 has been announced. You'll find a snapshot on the latest LXF DVD, and many things have changed, and it's very exciting. Are you excited?
No, because I'm using that other one now.
What? Chromium.
Chrome.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It's too late for Firefox. Andrew has switched.
Exactly. I'm not exactly an early adopter. having watched Graham struggle with Chrome for the past, it's like 18 months, and watching it crash and him going, oh, yeah, well, if I was using Firefox, it wouldn't have crashed.
Yeah.
And that's such a great advert for Chrome, you switched.
Well, he's not complained about Chrome crashing for a few months, so I thought I'd give it a go and, you know.
It doesn't behave very well with all my compass effects going on, I must admit. The tabs disappear in Chrome.
It's Graham's own fault, I tell you.
I have to swipe the pointer across where I know the tabs should be for them to be redrawn.
But I don't have any compass effects.
His PC can't handle a compass effect.
My eyesight is wobbly. I just enable wobbly
window.
Just straighten it all up.
Yeah. Yes, well, it's got a new Chrome look and feel.
Firefox has.
Yeah.
So that
just sounds like the James Bond films making themselves more like the Bourne Identity and therefore losing the essence of what made them good in the first place.
So you're not going to switch back then? It looks more like Chrome.
No, that's stupid.
Firefox has lost the essence of what made it good in the first place, which is what Chrome has massively taken advantage of.
You sound like that, like you're a knowledgeable person. Or something, Graham.
Well, no, we have talked about it before, despite the fact that there is going to be a big feature on it in the next issue of Linux Format magazine.
Which Graham wrote.
But it has. I mean, Chrome is just doing what Firefox did to the Mozilla suite of applications. And in pushing those tabs right to the very border of the window and in concentrating on the JavaScript engine, you know, they are doing what Chrome did.
So you're saying that Mozilla is the new Microsoft?
Well, no. I mean, I do prefer Firefox, and I still use it for a great many things. Some of the add-ons are absolutely fantastic. And I want them to do well. I trust them a little bit more than I do Google. So it'd be nice if they could at least get the JavaScript engine more competitive. I'm not sure what they can do with Gecko, because we all like WebKit. It's nice, it's fast, and the pages look really nice in it. I do kind of wish they'd dump Gecko.
Well, new features include more HTML5 support, WebM video format, faster CSS, blah, 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 improved UI responsiveness, whatever that means. Hardware 2D acceleration, that's good, so it draws things using like Canvas, using hardware what's possible. WebGL support, WebGL's very cool.
Oh yeah, that is very nice.
And in WebKit. And better JavaScript performance, apparently. And there's more coming before the final release.
Yeah, that's where the Jaegermeister is all the efforts.
We need Mike to say Jaeger monkey properly, maybe you can say it.
Jaeger monkey.
There you go, that's really good.
What's that, hunter monkey?
I guess so, yeah. Half in English, half in German.
Hang on, monkey?
Well, maybe monkey's German as well.
No, they don't have a word for monkey.
But monkey could mean something else. Could mean badger or something. No, badger's dachs, isn't it?
Yeah.
We learned that from a previous podcast. Yes, and that's Firefox. Moving on, Nokia is switching to Miko for its smartphone N series devices, which is the N95, N1,
yeah,
the expensive ones.
Yeah, the ones with the big screens.
Yes.
And the
Yeah, it must be 900 as well, presumably, yeah. We'll use Mego across the board.
Didn't they have something really nice before?
No. What did they have before? Hilden? With GTK / clutter / a bit of everything, quite frankly. It's a bit nasty.
It sounds like a good move, then. Streamlining, simplifying.
It looks like a skin, though. That's the trouble. I mean, I've said this before. Again, there's no kind of... It's not the Mego we've seen on the netbooks. It's the same icons. It's the same kind of design. The same icon design, the same kind of layout. I don't think what they're changing at the heart of it is any different to the previous N900 devices or the N devices, which is a little bit weird. I don't see where the two overlap. Where is the single Mego interface other than the fact that it's the same icons and probably similar applications? I don't know. But, you know, if people can look at a Mego netbook and say, oh, I've got that on my phone, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they can recognize it and feel stronger for it.
Well, you have to admit that one of the big features of the iPad when it came out was, you know, how do you use it? Well, if you can use an iPhone, you can use an iPad.
Yeah.
So 100 million users can use it immediately. So if they do manage to pull it off to make Mego work on both platforms in the same way.
But that's my point. That is iPhone OS 4. The OS on the netbooks running Mego and the phones running Mego is totally different. The kernel is totally different.
Yeah.
It's a skin. And so you're not going to know how to use it. It's just going to feel somewhat familiar.
Also, they're quite different devices too, because it's not like, you know, iPad's big iPhone, which is nice, but netbook has a keyboard, for example, which you're going to customize for.
Android
does touch screen.
Android seems to be doing this rather better. You know, they seem to have thought about larger devices. I know we haven't actually tried one, but your brother's got a Streak. I'd be interested to know what he thinks of it.
Well, we're supposed to be getting one in.
Oh, cool.
Yes, it'd be very interesting to see what it actually does. And finally, Osmos, one of the open source games from the Humble Indie Bundle, has announced that Linux did very well for it, has made many, many game sales.
Shock.
And, it actually worked really, really well. And they said many interesting things, of which it only took them 2 man-months of work to finish the Linux port. Because the Mac version was already using things like OpenGL, OpenAL, SDL, Vorbis, Ogg, for doing all the hard work. So actually the Linux port was a short hop from there to basically testing on different distros.
I think it's really good news. I think it's brilliant that people are willing to pay and support independent games developers.
Well, occasionally you think people typecast you a little bit as being a free software person.
Yeah.
You only want the software if it's free. But if someone makes a good game for Linux, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah. And, you know, especially with the talk of LGP disappearing, I know they've resurfaced, but you think, you know, things not getting any better for gaming, it's getting much worse. But the fact that there are people out there, the same with the Humble Indie Bumble and the success that had. The success that had, you know. It's great.
So, Osmos, this was part of the Humble Indie Bumble.
Yes, it was in the Bumble. Along with a few others like Lugaroo, which Mike talked about last week. See, if you have silly names for them, it's hard to say them on a podcast particularly.
So this sounds like... that long tail thing that Graham wrote about 5 years ago.
I thought it was Chris Anderson, but
It was so good that I remembered it.
Might have been Graham.
You know, you start by giving a few copies away, and then that makes people realise how awesome they are.
Well, they did say
make money.
That the lack of a strong Linux portal makes it much less competitive.
Mm.
Because on Windows, you can buy through
Steam.
On Xbox, you buy through the marketplace, off to the App Store and other devices. There isn't one for Linux, really. Well, there's Happy Penguin. Do they sell games? There's one. There is a games marketplace, isn't there?
Yeah, but I guess they say they got lots of sales through Steam, just by people browsing through Steam and buying their games. So there's nothing like that, is there? There's no application you can run.
Maybe there should be.
Hopefully there will be.
Backed up by a Linux Worldwide magazine with reputable editorial content.
Yeah, or just Steam for Linux.
Or just Steam for Linux. Yeah, well it's going to happen, isn't it? They also said, this is very interesting, and no one's flamed them yet for this. They said .deb, as in the format, is much more in demand, more so than all other package formats combined.
My God, who are these idiots? who aren't using devs?
So, Ubuntu haters, once more, you're proven to be morons. Bring it on! No, it could be using Debian, perhaps, or Mepis. Yeah, yep, Mepis is counting for that. Linux Mint. There are quite a few devs.
Or GNU Linux.
GNU Linux, there you go. And that is the news.
Now, it's time for You Dare Us.
Oh, no. What was it?
I don't know. I wasn't here.
I can't remember the exact.
I was having a really nice breakfast, actually.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day, actually.
It was gorgeous. I sat outside and just, you know, the lawn was freshly mowed. Blue skies, lovely. I apologise, listeners. I really thought the podcast was at 3, but it was at 11, so I just missed it.
Wasn't the football game at 3?
Was it?
Yeah, England, Slovenia, I think.
Oh, yeah, as if I would have bothered my arse to watch that. To watch that bunch of showers.
So, You Dare Us, it was right, a command line command. I think it was 50 characters, but
characters
we haven't actually
more.
Checked. Yeah. The coolest, most brilliant command line thing you could come up with to amaze all your friends.
Oh, right. So, like an alias to do cool stuff.
Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah. We all actually forgot about it until about 15 minutes ago.
But they're really good anyway.
Well, mine's all right, but yeah. It's not going to work on the radio, on the radio.
No. We want to hear it read out.
Can you not type it in on this machine here?
You haven't brought it.
I'm going to have to put it in the really good podcast notes. But it works. Well, what it is, it's ages ago I wrote a script for grabbing the astronomy picture of the day off the internet and making it my desktop background. And I still do that. I use the I modified the K screensaver script to talked about a few episodes ago. Anyway, I managed to get this down to a single line. It is about 200 characters long and there's the big URLs in it. But it's still, I can't remember how I did it initially, but it's still quite nice. It uses wget initially to grab the HTML page, and then it uses gawk to go through that page, the file that it's downloaded, to grab the file name of the image of the day. And then it uses wget again to grab the image and drop it into the folder that you run the command. And I think it's handy because you can do all kinds of stuff with it.
That's neat.
And so I have done it. It does work, and I'll put it in the notes.
Good work. I've got one too, and as you say, it was thought up a few minutes ago. And I'm going to read it out because it's completely unintelligible. I love it. It's not that bad. So actually, here's a competition. Who can figure it out first? So you're sitting there. How fast can you figure out what it does? So the command is curl space dash u space username colon password space dash d space status equals quote hello world quote space dash k, then https://, here's the giveaway, identity.ca/api/statuses/update.xml. Run that and you can update your identity or account from the command line.
Very nice. Very
does great. Does that use libferrys?
No, it uses curl. Hence, the command at the beginning was curl.
Ah, yeah. I see.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Replace username password with your username and password, and it should work. Just don't include exclamation marks, because obviously Bash doesn't like that in commands. And annoyingly, if you actually put an exclamation mark in commands, like I like to do in, say, subversion commits or whatever, Bash goes, don't understand that command line, and then you press up to repeat it and remove the command line at the exclamation mark, and it's removed the whole command. So it's gone from history. It zaps it from history, which is very annoying. You have to type it all from scratch. So don't use exclamation marks or escape them.
Or send your password over open networks.
Whatever.
So what... I mean, I've clearly failed, and so has Mike. Unless...
Pink ponies. Naturally.
So what can we do next week? Next week. Next fortnight. What are we doing then?
Well, it has to be special because me and Graham will be out of the country.
Will you?
We'll be.
That means I'm going to win.
Yes. We'll be at OSCON.
First to OSCON.
Oh, denied. So if we record one next week, then we haven't got much time. Have something nice and easy. How about do something nice and easy?
How about recording a video with
That was one of the comments.
That was very naturally done
with a webcam or something.
That was one of the comments.
Or,
yes.
Or for YouTube, or but make it on Linux, obviously.
So make it using any Linux device,
like that,
like my Android
phone. No, not that.
So like using an Android phone or a netbook or a laptop or something.
Okay,
excellent.
That sounds like a brilliant idea.
Yes, it's not about your editing skills; it's about your presenting skills. Good luck. And with such vague forethought, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week, and of course our section in the hot seat, where it's me talking about Python and not ranting at all. I promise.
All right, and following that, it's now time for our discovery of the fortnight section, which is my personal favourite. There's obviously going to be three of us only giving our discoveries this fortnight, so I'll talk a little bit slower. Shall I go first, or do you need some more time to think, Andrew?
No, I want to go first.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Go for it.
I discovered that with tiny URL, you can append a custom suffix to it. So tiny URL slash, and then you type in some words, make the URL. And so rather than just being some anonymous collection of numbers and letters, you can make a URL that looks like it actually means something.
Ah.
So so tiny URL / manky-monkey. You know, no one had taken it. I was surprised.
Isn't monkey spelt in quite a confusing way?
I spelt monkey two ways, yes.
Ah, so people who can't spell.
Because the first time I did it with the proper spelling of monkey, and it wasn't as good. And then I found a better version, but then I'd obviously used manky monkey already, so I had to spell it a stupid way.
Yeah.
It all makes sense when you see the podcast notes.
Actually, a better idea. So we printed a URL for Tiny URL in the magazine, which obviously Andrew is referring to, Manky Monkey. But a few months ago, well, last year, in fact, someone printed a bit.ly URL on our intranet, but hadn't actually claimed that URL yet. So I went in and put up a Michael Jackson meme. Why do they call it the Xbox 360? Because when you see it, you turn 360 degrees and walk away, which, of course, Michael Jackson can do because he moonwalks. And so people are going to this site looking for some sort of designer artist information from our internet, and it found Michael Jackson animated GIFs. So actually, what you could have done is not registered Manky Monkey and challenged our podcast listeners to come up with a better URL. Fill this URL with something most Linuxy geeky thing as you can. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Next podcast, perhaps.
A cavalcade of failure. My second discovery is... is from
what's
that
going on?
It's from that unimpeachable source of wisdom, the Daily Mail, which says that now more internet users are old. Last year, there's an extra 1 million Britons aged over 50 going online for the first time.
Were they 49 the year before that?
Well, presumably so. I don't know. And then it goes on to there's all sorts of words in this story, which you know.
Any mention of the royal family?
There. Well, many of them are old, aren't they?
Yes.
But apparently the internet's getting more mature. Uh-huh. But it does raise the intriguing possibility that you'll be able to say to old people, I remember when the internet was all just fields, and then let them know how it feels. But of course the payoff is that 50 isn't that old at all, actually, and that genuinely old people...
You say that as you get older.
Yeah.
It seemed a long while away when I was in my 20s. Now it's only 12 years away.
Oh, Graham. Poor Graham.
I know.
Yes.
Right, okay. Well, before Paul's onslaught of discoveries...
I only have two.
Okay, do you want to go next then?
Sure. I've discovered an awesome musician who makes free software music.
Excellent.
Do you want to hear some?
Join us now. Share the software.
It's you'll Richard Stallman, isn't it? It's hard to tell, isn't it? It could be Mike, could be Richard, no one knows. Yes, he's always close to us in our hearts.
Yes.
And the second thing, the real thing I've discovered, is called the YouTube comment snob, which is great. It's a Firefox extension that filters out undesirable comments from YouTube. So anything with more than X number of spelling mistakes, or all in capital letters, or no capital letters, or doesn't start with a capital letter, or has too many exclamation marks together, or too many question marks together, or profanity gets filtered out.
That's ace.
It is ace.
What about mentions of...
There's nothing left.
Mentions of the Second World War.
Actually, it's mostly things like chocolate rain on YouTube, I'm afraid. But yes, so it filters out bits of YouTube's comments, the worst bits, leaving... Well, not much, really.
Leaving all the boring bits.
Exactly, yeah. So you can try it out if you want to. See what you think. It makes your YouTube experience any easier.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, very, very reserved choice there from Paul. And mine is a Linux application. Who'd have thought that?
Does it involve music?
No, it doesn't. In fact, somebody sent me a link this week, and maybe I'm slow on this, but somebody sent me a video, it might have been on YouTube, of a 3D fractal cube thing. that had been rendered, and it was amazing. It's like it was a, it's a, if you imagine the Death Star made out of fractals, as you got closer and closer to the Death Star, it moves into it, it creates this infinite complexity, cavernous thing. You carry on going into it and into it, just like old Mandelbrot fractals, which I always loved back in the Amiga days, except that they took 20 minutes to render each frame. Anyway, it seems to be based on this application called Mandelbulba. That's the right way it's spelled, and it uses fractal trigonometry to create infinitely complex interiors. So the cube is just one example, but there are lots of other examples you can choose between and then zoom into them. It takes a long time to render them, and it creates these fantastic spaces that don't look at all like old Mandelbrot fractals, that look more like the interior of alien spaceships, and it's very good.
I'm still thinking about the Death Star.
Yeah, well, that was
Death Star. A Death Star made of fractals.
Yeah.
That's no example. Moon.
It's an infinitely complex interior.
Yeah, that's right. You could go on forever and ever and ever.
Does the cafe have Penny alla Arrabbiata made out of fractals?
It's really difficult to destroy it as well, because you can never find the porthole. You just keep going in and in and in and in until you see yourself ahead of you. Have you got all your notes ready?
I haven't got any notes. We haven't got a wheel. We've got no notes. This is pathetic.
Where's the squeaky Mike? Toy?
Yeah, where exactly. Is Mike?
Yes. No. So I've got to talk about Python for a minute. So here we go. I'm going to press start on my stopwatch here, and I'll just talk to you about Python being so awesome. You ready? You're not ready. Strap yourself in, because you've got no idea what's coming. Neither have I. Okay, Python. Python is, for some reason, better or worse, the most popular command line programming language on Linux. We're doing all sorts of scripting, which is a shame, because in the old days we had nice things like Rex and A-Rex, but now we have Python, and I'm not very fond of it for multiple reasons. Firstly, I don't think it's a very discoverable language. Neither is PHP, for that example. You know, you can't just do file dot and see a list of completions or whatever that match that area like you can do with Vim. You have to try and work your way around it by guessing functions, which annoys the heck out of me. Same for PHP, to be fair. You have tabs for spacing, to do functions and stuff, which seems like a very small problem, and it is a very small problem when you're typing your own code in, but try and copy-paste from a magazine or from a screenshot or from code. It's really, really hard to do, and in fact, it completely muffs things up. So that annoys me no end. I don't think it's very fast. I don't think it's particularly powerful by itself without the functions built into it, and I just don't like the way it's so popular. People rant about how spaces are so important rather than tabs and PEPs and stuff, and it drives me up the wall.
Okay, that's it.
There you go.
And you were just getting started.
Does wrap me at the wall. I can't get too angry about it. I use Python.
It's okay, Paul. It's just a programming language.
I know. It is. It is. There you go, readers. It's just a programming language. You know, we should relax, retire, get on with life. It's just a programming language. The fact that it has the world's worst documentation. Now I'm getting off. And with that sick gear rush back to real work, i.e. doing a magazine, we come to the end of our podcast, at which point Mike is interjecting from Munich. That's very interesting, Mike.
Das ist nicht die Ende des Podcasten. Es gibt einmal mehr Dinge.
Yes, that's excellent. We come to the real end of our podcast, at which point we can say, we'll see you in 1 week, 2 weeks.
They'll hear the results in 2 weeks.
That's true, yeah. And we are going to get back to our real jobs. So hopefully you'll hear from us in 2 weeks with some awesome new stuff. Until then, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. It's such a nice day.